Thanks for listening to us on the Jefferson Exchange today. We're always glad you're here. And if you'd like to join our conversations, feel free. 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782. Email address, jx@jeffnet.org. We do not have many of the wonderful inventions of science fiction. There are no flying cars yet, for one thing. But we do have the ability to look deep within our bodies and gather clues to medical problems we might face in the future. Genetic testing is on the increase and is now available in the Rogue Valley through Asante Rogue Regional Medical Center in Medford through a partnership with OHSU, Oregon Health and Science University. So let's examine what genetic testing is all about. We have three guests with us in this segment. Sue Kilborn is an RN and the Director of Cancer Services at Asante in the studio with me here. Sue, welcome.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good to have you back. We have from OHSU, Dr. Joan Sampson, certified in genetic medicine. Welcome, Dr. Sampson.
Thank you. Good morning.
And we also have Kelly Hammond with us, who is a genetic counselor at Oregon Health and Science University. Kelly, welcome to you.
Thank you.
So let's start with the basic stuff with Dr. Sampson then. What is genetic counseling and what actually is examined in the process of genetic testing, rather?
Well, we have set up a telemedicine program down at Rogue Valley specifically for germline cancer predisposition testing. So we're able to see patients via telemedicine, get a family history, get a personal history, medical history, and then determine from that information if any genetic testing for hereditary cancer predisposition syndromes is indicated.
So there's a fair amount of exploration and history before you even get to the point of genetic testing, from the sounds of it.
Exactly, because not everybody is a candidate for genetic testing.
And of the people who would come through the doors then, I mean, do you have a percentage at this point for how many people would be likely to qualify or be a likely candidate for genetic testing?
Well, I think a lot of that depends on what kind of referrals we get. And, you know, usually when we embark on this kind of program, we set out guidelines for individuals, for referring physicians for their patients who would likely be eligible for genetic testing. And those people largely are individuals who've been diagnosed with particular kinds of cancers at a younger age than we would expect, or individuals who have a family history of, let's say, colon cancer, breast and ovarian cancer, you know, things like that.
All right. Sue Kilborn, how did the whole partnership with OHSU on genetic testing and counseling get set up?
Actually, it came with the request of a lot of our physicians in our area. We have a very active cancer committee, and they approached us and asked that, you know, previously what any patients that needed genetic counseling or testing, we had to send them up to Portland. And so they were asking if there was a way we could get this service in our area. So from there, it was just mainly working with OHSU to get this telemedicine clinic set up.
So when did the clinic open, or has it opened yet?
It opened last Monday was our first clinic.
Okay, so September 16th. And was there a bit of pent-up demand? I mean, were people breaking down the doors, or has it been a bit of a trickle thus far?
You know, we've started slowly because we needed to get the information out to our physicians in our area and make sure that we get appropriate referrals. But actually, you know, I've had a lot of the physicians that are the surgeons and the medical oncologists that have actually, you know, they have people waiting for this. So I think we're starting off slow, but I think we're going to build up speed really quickly.
Dr. Joan Sampson, when we talk about telemedicine in this context, what does it mean?
Oh, well, essentially, it's, well, I call it Secure Skype. I think it's Jabber is the program that they use. But it's very much like Skype, except it's, you know, secure in whatever way that means. I'm not an Intel an informatics person. But I can see the patient. The patient can see me as we're doing the interview. And then it also has a feature where you can use audiovisual aids if you want to use them, you know, a figure or something to explain a concept. You can have that either be the full screen and then you and the patient are in little screens. I mean, it's very interesting technology, but it does allow for a complete patient visit just as if you were face-to-face, only, you know, remotely.
And if beyond the interview, there is genetic testing called for. Then what is tested? What is sampled? What does the patient have to deliver in order to get the genetic testing done?
Well, that's an interesting question because that's part of setting up this infrastructure and part of the reason that we just had a couple patients the first day. It's set up through the infusion unit down at Rogue Valley. So there is someone there available to either to draw blood, to collect a sample, because we need something. White blood cells give us DNA. A couple other companies will take a saliva sample, so it's not necessarily blood. But there has to be someone to collect the sample on that end. And there's some paperwork that has to be filled out. But some of the tests can actually be ordered online remotely as well. So all that's been ironed out on the Rogue Valley end. And actually Kelly, who's on the line here, was in Rogue Valley last week for the first session just to make sure that things on that end ran smoothly.
And Kelly, how did that go?
Oh, it actually went very well. The consults went smoothly. The telemedicine equipment worked well. We had one patient have a blood draw, so the nurse came over and did that for us. Everything worked as good as you could expect for the first time, absolutely.
We were talking about genetic testing and counseling here on the Jefferson Exchange. Is there a partnership now formed between Asante Rogue Regional Medical Center in Medford and Oregon Health and Science University in Portland? We have with us Sue Kilborn, Director of Cancer Services at Asante, Dr. Joan Sampson, and Kelly Hammond from OHSU on the line. You can join us. You may have lots of questions and comments about this whole process. 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782. And our email address, jx@jeffnet.org. First call, Jim in Grants Pass. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Yes, good morning. A little curious about something. All of us received one of these glossy things in the mail. Oregon Institute of Science and Medicine, Cave Junction address. We send a card. They send us a mailer to send them back a lot of personal information and a urine sample. Is this legit, and how safe is our personal information?
That's a different news story. It turns out that is Art Robinson, who is the Oregon Republican Party chair and was a candidate for Congress twice in the last two elections. It is his company doing that. We'll deal with that in the coming days. But the question about legitimacy, well, let's see. If you're asked to deliver something through the mail, Kelly or Joan, how secure is that? And I hear silence.
I have no idea. I don't know anything about this.
And, Jim, it just came to your mailbox?
Well, it just came a couple of weeks ago, and it must have come to almost everybody because there was not addressed to me, so it was something the post office was just putting in all our mailboxes. It's a very four-page glossy thing. And anyway, I'm really curious.
All right. Thanks for the curiosity, Jim, for sharing that with us. And who was speaking up there?
This is Kelly. I was just going to say that's unrelated to what we're doing with Asante and Rogue Regional. That's not what we're offering.
All right. True. That does raise the question, though, about if you're collecting either blood or saliva through part of the genetic testing process, is that tested within the Rogue Valley for the patients who go to Asante to get that done, or is that does that move somewhere?
All of the labs all of the samples that we test to go out to outside labs. None of the testing is even offered, I don't think, down at Rogue Valley. But the samples are all sent by FedEx overnight.
Yeah, actually.
With tracking.
All right, so yeah. you always tell where it is, okay.
Yeah, actually, because it's specialty labs that do this testing that, Rogue Regional isn't set up to do that at this time. So they're kits that come from these large labs, and then our nurses collect the blood, and then we send them to our lab that ship them out. It's all very secure.
And Joan Sampson, not to get overly technical, especially because we're on the radio and can't use charts or diagrams, but what are you looking for in either the blood or saliva sample?
Well, we're looking for a mutation in a gene that would increase a person's risk for certain types of cancers. So I think everybody's really familiar with the BRCA genes. BRCA1 and BRCA2 are two genes And if you have a mutation in one of the genes, mutation meaning that it makes one copy of the gene not function, that increases a woman's risk, lifetime risk for breast and ovarian cancer. And then there are a number of different hereditary colon cancer syndromes. So depending upon the family history, depending upon the person's personal history of colon polyps, we might decide to send testing for either Lynch syndrome or familial adenomatous polyposis, which are the two most common hereditary colon cancer predisposition syndromes. Okay. And then there's a whole variety of other cancer predisposition syndromes that include usually a group of different types of cancers. And it's through taking the family history and the personal history, seeing what types of cancers family members have had, how old they were, what types of cancer the patient has had, we determine which syndrome we want to order testing for.
All right, so that will certainly narrow the field of what you're going to look for.
Right. I mean, that's how we decide, is basically based on the patient's personal and family history.
And how long has genetic testing of this kind been available directly at OHSU in the Portland area?
We started doing BRCA and some colon cancer, hereditary colon cancer testing, probably late 1980s, early to mid 1990s.
Okay, so a long time then, several decades. Okay.
Well, yeah, but I think as time has gone on, there have been more tests added, more genes identified. You know, so it's sort of a work in progress.
Is there something of an explosion in the field in the sense that the technology is coming along rapidly to detect additional genetic malformations, abnormalities?
Yeah, definitely. And I think, too, it used to be that you could just order one or two genes, and now different companies have extensive panels of genes that you can order, which has made the testing much less expensive, but it's made it more complicated as well. And I think really, in the old days, it used to be your oncologist could order BRCA and one and BRCA2 testing, and now you can get a whole panel of tests. And I think it's really important that a patient see a genetic counselor and have genetic counseling before they embark on testing. And I'm not quite sure that the oncologists are really aware of these big panels that are available and when they should use them. So I think that's where we come in handy.
Kelly Hammond, how long has the field of genetic counseling been available? It sounds like the testing's been around for a couple of decades now.
Oh, several decades. It's gotten a lot bigger in the last, I'd say, two decades, but I honestly don't know initially when it started, but I'd say at least 40 years.
All right. And from what Dr. Sampson was just saying, though, it is not necessarily after you've gotten a test. It's actually something that will occur prior to the physical test as well.
Oh, absolutely. Pre-test genetic counseling is even, as important or more important than post-test counseling. That's where we go over with a patient what they are being tested for, how it could impact their medical management, as well as information that will impact their family. Also, we discuss with them any concerns about potential insurance discrimination, and, of course, give them the chance to either be tested or to decline testing, because sometimes folks do not wish to go ahead with testing.
Can they do the testing without the counseling, though?
There does have to be a physician that orders the testing. Mm-hmm. So, hopefully, like Dr. Sampson said, we know some oncologists had ordered testing in the past, and hopefully that patient did get some pre-test counseling. But we always recommend a genetics professional, either a genetic counselor or a medical geneticist, provide that service. And some insurance companies are actually starting to require that.
All right. I want to get into the insurance and cost issues. I want to invite our listeners again to join us, though. We are talking about genetic testing and counseling now available at Asante Rogue Regional Medical Center in Medford through a partnership with Oregon Health and Science University. You can join us here at 800-838-3760, anywhere you can hear us, in the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782. Email address jx@jeffnet.org. Sue Kilborn at Asante, had this been the kind of thing that Asante was trying to find the means to put together just within the Rogue Valley, and it just ended up being a somewhat easier deal by forming the partnership with OHSU?
Yeah. We've been looking at this for a while. Like I said before, in the past, our choices were to send our patients up to Portland. to have the genetic testing and counseling. There's some genetic testing, like she said, that could be ordered and sent away by some of the physicians in our area, but to have the true counseling, people were having to travel to Portland. So it's nice that we can keep them in our area.
All right. We have an email from Jenny in Roseburg. She wants to know, is there testing for genes affecting diabetes? Dr. Jones-Sampson?
Well, currently we are only offering hereditary cancer predisposition testing at Rogue Valley. It's not totally my field of expertise, but I know there are some, there is some testing that looks at a combination of different mutations in different genes that may increase a person's risk for diabetes. I'm not sure how clinically useful that is because, things like high blood pressure, being overweight, and, those things probably contribute as much to diabetes as genetics does. But, that's the short answer to that question. But that's really not my field of expertise.
But then that does point up some differences here. I mean, you could indicate, in cancer or non-cancer areas, that there could be a genetic predisposition towards something, but your own behavior could potentially affect whether you ever develop the disease that you might be.
Right. I think the difference is if you look at an individual who has a BRCA mutation, her lifetime risk for breast cancer is somewhere close to 80%, 80 to 90%. And I never tell patients that they shouldn't, eat a healthy diet and exercise and keep a healthy weight, but that's not going to decrease that woman's risk for breast cancer. You see what I'm saying? A normal woman who has a 10% lifetime risk for breast cancer, if she has a healthy diet and exercises and keeps a healthy weight, takes her vitamin D, she can probably decrease her risk for breast cancer more than a woman can who has a BRCA mutation. So I think with diabetes, I think your lifestyle choices probably impact your risk for diabetes actually more than the genetics.
So when it comes to cancer issues or potential cancer issues, Kelly Hammond, as a genetic counselor, it sounds like by the time that people would get results of a test, they'd be pretty well aware from family history that they might be prone to have a certain kind of genetic change.
Yes, usually people who come to us with a family history, either there's a several generation family history of breast cancer, and so, of course, that woman already realizes she has a slightly increased risk for breast cancer based on the family history. But if she pursues genetic testing and is found to have a mutation in a cancer predisposition gene, the risk is much higher than you would anticipate. So there's different surveillance that we recommend for those women, as well as potential prophylactic options as well.
Prophylactic options like double mastectomies?
Correct. And then also, if a family member comes to us where there has already been a mutation identified in the family and they test negative for that mutation, they're then at the general population risk for those cancers because we have an explanation of why those cancers have occurred in the family, that mutation that was identified, and this patient does not have that mutation, so they're actually at the general population risk, not based on the family history. So that is a very useful tool for family members, obviously.
We did skirt the cost of the issue of cost and insurance coverage. And so what does genetic testing cost, and how often does insurance cover this, and is the coverage increasing as time goes on?
Yes, coverage has definitely been increasing over the last several years, and cost has been decreasing at the same time. So testing does generally cost, for a family mutation, around $400 or $500, but then up to a few $1,000s for the first person in the family that's tested. It is billed to insurance, and most of the laboratories that we use actually check the insurance prior to starting the test. So we always work with the patient to let them know exactly what their out-of-pocket cost is going to be before the test is started, so then they can determine if their potential cost is feasible for them for that information that they could get from the testing.
I know there's been expressed in the past a certain fear of the information of genetic testing getting out there, that an insurance company might say, well, this is a pre-existing condition, we can't cover this anymore. This will be less of an issue as the Affordable Care Act comes online, assuming it comes online on schedule. Mm-hmm. But has that been an ethical discussion within genetic counselors, genetic testers?
Oh, yeah, we always discuss potential insurance issues or fears with patients who are about to have testing or, you know, considering testing. But there are, even at this point in time, laws that protect a person from their health insurance company using genetic test result as a pre-existing condition. So those laws are already in effect, even without the Affordable Care Act.
Sue Kilborn, with this partnership then with OHSU and Asante, how many people are you structured to take in? I mean, is there a specific separate clinic set up for genetic testing and counseling?
Yeah, we've set up a specific clinic, and we're starting small. You know, hopefully we'll be able to expand it as time goes on. But right now we're setting up two clinics a month, and they're half-day clinics. So, usually the visits are lasting about an hour, so we're able to see four people a month. I think if some people start returning, we'll be able to, you know, squeeze a few more in. So we're just going to see how it goes.
And is it really, as you alluded at the very beginning, that it's really a function of if the oncologist has sent them over?
It's not necessarily the oncologist. You know, what we're trying to do is get the information out to the primary care physicians in our area, as well as our specialists, because we really want people to talk to their physician first to see if it's, you know, it's appropriate for them to come in for genetic testing. So a lot of our efforts right now are built on getting the information out to the physicians in our area.
All right, so it really is a case of, rather than contacting Asante directly about this, talk to your physician first and then work it that way.
Yeah, people can contact us, but if they do, that what we're going to do is refer them back to their primary care physicians first. But we're you know, happy to give information as well.
All right, genetic testing and counseling now available in the Rogue Valley through Asante Rogue Regional Medical Center. I think I've said it right the first time through. First time ever. And Oregon Health and Science University. Sue Kilborn is the Director of Cancer Services at Asante. Dr. Joan Sampson and Kelly Hammond are both up at OHSU. Thank you all for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, we'll take a brief break and return with Garrison Keillor and the Writer's Almanac here on the Jefferson Exchange on JPR.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Monday. It's the 23rd of September, 2013. It was on this day, 1806, Lewis and Clark, Meriwether Lewis, William Clark, returned to St. Louis after their expedition. 2.5 years, 8,000 miles, they traveled all the way to the Pacific Ocean and back, exploring the new Louisiana Territory for Thomas Jefferson. They each kept detailed journals, so we know a lot about their trip. They had left St. Louis in the spring of 1804, spent the first winter at a camp on the Missouri in what is now North Dakota. They set off west in May of 1805 after they had sent a boat back to St. Louis with some of the members of the expedition who they did not particularly need, they realized, and who carried in the boat reports for Jefferson and some letters to friends and family and all sorts of objects, skeletons and skins and dried plants and rocks. There were some Indian artifacts, cooking pot, bow and arrows, buffalo skin, and there were live animals they sent back, 4 magpies and a sharp-tailed grouse and a prairie dog which they'd kept alive in a cage. The boat traveled down the Missouri, down to St. Louis, and then another boat took the stuff to New Orleans, and then a ship took it to Washington, D.C., where it reached Thomas Jefferson in August. And then there was no further word from them until this day in 1806. They came through St. Charles, Missouri. People were astonished to see them. They thought they'd all disappeared and were dead. Got back to St. Louis, and Meriwether Lewis wrote a letter to Jefferson, a letter that took almost a month to reach the president in Washington, in which Lewis wrote, "In obedience to your orders, we have penetrated the continent of North America to the Pacific Ocean, and sufficiently explored the interior of the country to affirm with confidence that we have discovered the most practical route which does exist across the continent by means of the navigable branches of the Missouri and Columbia rivers." From St. Louis, fall 1806, they made their way to Louisville and from there to Virginia and to Jefferson's home in Monticello. It's the birthday of the poet Euripides, born near Athens in the year 480 B.C., who probably wrote about 92 plays, 19 of which have been preserved. He was the Greek playwright who portrayed the gods as being much darker, petty, uncaring, and one of the first writers to treat women as major characters. And it's the birthday of Bruce Springsteen, Freehold, New Jersey, 1949, played in a number of bands with names like The Rogues, The Steel Mill, Dr. Zoom, and The Sonic Boom. His album Born in the USA, 1984, was one of the best-selling albums of all time. Here's a poem for today by Mary Oliver, How It Is With Us and How It Is With Them. We become religious, then we turn from it, then we are in need, and maybe we turn back. We turn to making money, then we turn to the moral life, then we think about money again. We meet wonderful people, but lose them in our busyness. We're, as the saying goes, all over the place. Steadfastness, it seems, is more about dogs than about us. One of the reasons we love them so much. A poem by Mary Oliver, How It Is With Us and How It Is With Them, from her collection Dog Songs, published by Penguin and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by LendingTree, where you can fill out one form and receive up to 5 loan offers at trylendingtree.com, NMLS 1136. Produced by Joy Biles, with assistance from Kathy Roach. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.